Hello?
Hi, can I speak to Nicole Bach, please?
Okay.
Hi, Nicole. My name's Michael. I'm calling from MMA Legal. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Fantastic. We have a set password from your account as Alexander08.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a 7 minutes to have a chat with me, Nicole, about your Scottish redress case?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Just to let you know, Nicole, all my calls are recorded for training and monitoring purposes. It's my role for here in MMA is to go out and gather your evidence as part of the investigation team. So that's why the social services, the foster care that you were in, education authorities, and the like. But it's also to get to know you better, and try and understand, the trauma you've faced as a child, how that's had an effect and haunted you into your adult life. Through stuff like evidence like being diagnosed with anxiety or depression or PTSD, any sort of alcohol or substance issues, then I can write to GPs, NHSs, addiction charities, and gather that information for you. And all that does, Nicole, is to paint a picture to the Scottish redress of not only obviously Nicole because of care, in care should I say, but also Nicole because of care.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So I am going to ask you some tough questions, Nicole, and I am sorry for having to ask you them, but I wouldn't be doing my job for you, represent you if I don't ask, so I am sorry, Nicole. Have you ever been diagnosed with anxiety or depression?
Yes, depression.
Okay. Depression. And did you end up on medication from your GP?
Yeah, I was on antidepressants for years.
Okay. Have you had any issues with alcohol or any sort of substance issues, Nicole? That I can evidence. I mean, obviously, recreationally is not an issue.
I've been told I'm borderline alcoholic due to the fact that I was born from an alcoholic.
Okay.
As a teenager, I used to get drunk every weekend.
Yeah.
It was a case of downing bottles of cider, at the local park.
Yeah. Do we have or could you, does your GP know about that, or?
No, it was just classed as teenage behaviour.
Yeah. Well, what do you think it was? It was obviously a bit more than that, was it?
Yeah, I was drinking 2 to 3 bottles of cider.
Uh-huh.
And by that point, I felt that little about myself.
Yeah.
I was drinking to blot out everything.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Even now, when I'm down,
Yeah.
I have to find another way to cope with being down than just reaching for the bottle.
Yeah. And what are the coping mechanisms do you use to keep you away from alcohol?
Violent video games.
Violent video games?
Yeah. Oh, that helps.
Oh, that's cool. What, you get a lot of frustration out on them, do you?
Yeah, I play video games so I don't go and hurt myself or hurt anybody else in real life.
That's amazing.
But, as I say, I've not had an easy child and adolescence. I was groomed at the age of 14.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Everything that happened to you as a child has a massive effect on your other life and for you in particular, and all other survivors. You know, it's incomprehensible the life that you've had to go through so far.
Well, you grow up thinking that you're not worthy of being loved.
You know,
because the one person that is meant to love you, your mum, gave you up. Now, in my case, she chose one child over the other.
Okay.
I have a half-sister.
Yeah.
She chose to put me up for adoption and keep my half-sister.
That must have been really mentally challenging for you to get around.
Yeah. It took a good 2 or 3 years in therapy to realise that it wasn't my fault.
No, it's not your fault. It's never any of our survivors' fault, really. Did you speak to a therapist through your GP, or did you do that privately?
No, I went private. I tried counselling through my GP.
Yeah.
But I ended up going private.
Okay.
And I still have our contact details.
Okay. So what I'm going to do, with your permission, is I'll write to your therapist. And I'll gather as much information from her as I can. I'll also write to your GP, Nicole, and I'll get, obviously, your issues with your mental health. And then we'll present that to the Scottish Redress. I do have one more question for you, Nicole. And it's probably the toughest one that I'll have to ask you. And again, I apologise in advance. Have you ever tried to take your own life? Nicole?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The first time I tried to take my own life, I was 16 after having an abortion.
Oh.
And I ended up in hospital.
Yeah, okay.
That is the only suicide attempt that is on record. Because I was taken to the Western Hospital in Glasgow.
Okay, I think
the rest of them, I have tried to take my life several times. The rest of them have just slept it off.
No, I'm sorry. Was that mainly overdoses, was it? Hospital?
Yeah. They were all overdoses.
I'm sorry you said that was your option at the time. When was your the last one? I mean, how long has it been?
The last one was over 15 years ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
But social services did drive me to... The last time I tried to take pills was over, 15 years ago. The last time I tried to commit suicide was in 2019.
Okay.
When I almost walked out in front of an oncoming car.
Oh, wow.
Because by that time, social services had taken my child.
Yeah.
And had also taken my mum from me because she suffered from dementia. And I felt I had nothing. They'd taken everything from me. What did I have to live for?
Yeah, I get that.
Because that is the thing. Children that are brought up in care are more likely to have their kids taken off them.
Yeah, of course.
Because of this crystal ball method of risk of future harm.
Yeah, I've got lots of clients whose children have been taken off.
I now have my son.
Because they were in care.
Yeah.
Mental. You think, children of you survivors of the care system, you think they would be the parents that would treat the kids, totally different to how they were taught or how they were treated? But to try and take them off survivors like yourself and throw the kids into care, it's just creating vicious circles after vicious circles, isn't it?
Well, it's an epidemic that's going on in this country of forced adoptions.
Yeah.
They are taking kids that, instead of taking kids of parents that are actively abusing their children or have records of abusing their children, they leave those kids to die.
Yeah.
But the kids that are getting treated decent, they want off the parents so they can then go and adopt them and get bonuses and lie on record.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah, creating absolutely a new terrifying generation that is then traumatised.
I don't know. I don't get how these authorities think, taking children from parents. I get, obviously, if the kids are in danger, and I get that. But taking it off a parent just because the parent was in care and creating a whole new cycle of, abandonment issues and future drug and alcohol and mental health problems, it's just putting masses of strain back onto the Scottish Government. I don't get why they think that's an answer.
That's the thing, it's not even just the Scottish Government anymore, it's the English one as well.
Yeah, there's a Church of England scheme open up soon down here.
Yeah, it's a case of adoptive parents don't want kids that are being abused at home because they don't want to deal with the issues.
Yeah, of course.
That's going to come with that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
They want nice, happy, perfect kids.
Mm.
And you can only get that off of parents that actually love their children.
Yeah.
But if you use the crystal ball method or turn around and take them 2 days after they've been born, which... I am part of a Facebook group called PAR.
PAR?
It is actively a group that is fighting against social services in Scotland.
Yeah.
Because they are saying that mothers that have been raised in care don't know how to look after their kids because they've not had a stable upbringing. Or, as I say, with me, it was at risk of future harm. Now, the reason social services got involved with me to begin with is because I have a neurological condition called epilepsy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they kept saying, how do we know the trauma that seeing his mother go into seizures is causing on her son?
Yeah. Well, it's frightening. It really is.
Uh-huh.
It's scary. I'm sorry that you had to go through that issues. I'm sorry that your child has had to. How was your child? Is your child back with you now? Or?
Yes, my child is back with me because, unlike my biological mother,
yeah,
I didn't just lie down and accept it. I fought. I fought for 5 years until I won.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. It's amazing that you did win, but 5 years, taking a child away from you for 5 years, that must have been so painful.
Yeah. It was, especially birthdays, Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And I got kicked out of my home by adult social services in 2009. That's why I'm in England, because I ended up moving in with my partner down here.
Yeah.
And we literally put ourselves in over £5,000 of debt after COVID.
Yeah.
Going up to Scotland, renting Airbnbs so that we could have access to our son, but so we could have a home, that we could create a home life for him for a week. And that is actually what worked. The fact that we were willing to go above and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, rent Airbnbs for a week. So he could go to school and come home and, you know, have dinners, etc. And show a stable environment. And the care home that he was in actually worked with us instead of when he was in foster care. The foster care mother had been promised them, so she was actively working against me.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
That's mental. Absolutely, absolutely mental. You had to go through that just to get your own child. I'm sorry.
Well, as you said, I'm a survivor.
You are a survivor, yeah. When I get I need your GP details, please, Nicole, and the hospital that you're hospitalised in at 16.
The hospital would be the Great Western Hospital in... God, what's it? It's in Glasgow.
Okay. I'll find it from there.
GP that I was under then.
No, now, your latest GP?
My English GP is Park Surgery.
Park.
Surgery.
Yeah, and whereabouts is that?
That's in Heanor. H-E-A-N-O-R.
Okay. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll write to the Great Western at the NHS Trust. I'll write to your GP. I need to speak to you a second about Margaret and Jim foster family.
All I know, it was on the outskirts of Edinburgh.
Okay, so if I delete this.
And I was reading through my notes again, because I have my files from, I have, you know, at 18 you can ask for whatever social services had on you.
Yeah.
And it was paper thin. But one thing that raised the red flag was, it said that Jim used to pay a lot of attention to me.
Okay.
Now, he wasn't the foster parent. Margaret was.
Okay.
But he used to apparently spend a lot of time with me. Now, this is in the 1980s when men didn't really spend a lot of time with kids.
Yeah, I know.
Which is raising all sorts of red flags.
Yeah.
You. the fact that he is you. It says that we had a very close bond.
2 to 3 years old.
Yeah.
Well,
now, I don't remember my time in foster care.
Yeah.
And I would prefer, you know, I don't know if he did anything, and to be quite honest, I would like not to, if he did not remember it.
Yeah.
But it just seems weird. As I said to the other lady, when my adoptive mum and dad got me, my mum found out that I had worked out that I was deaf.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I was walking past and wasn't hearing what she was saying.
Yeah.
I had severe... I'm dyslexic and dyspraxic. She had spent hours on the floor going over simple jigsaws with me to get me to do them.
Yeah.
And she said, I wasn't even toilet trained.
How old was you?
I was 3 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And she said, when I used to wet myself, and she'd say, come on, let's go into the toilet. I need to go. Come on, let's go. I would get absolutely hysterical, as if I'd been used to being punished.
Oh, wow.
So, and she said, apparently, the foster home, the only toys I had was a ratty teddy bear and a tin pram. And I still slept in a cot. Because she actually asked my social worker, should I buy a cot? And he said, no, she should be in her bed by this time.
Yeah, of course.
And she says, when we brought you home and put you in your bed, I used to come and find you asleep on the floor in the morning.
Mm.
Because I was not used to nothing being on the side. I'd just roll out the bed.
Now you would have been used to sleeping in a cot.
Uh-huh. Not only that, I had bunions.
Bunions? Is that because the clothes are too small?
Yeah.
She said,
when they took me home, there was a family christening that weekend. And they literally had to go to Marks and Spencer's and dress me from the inside out. Because there was holes in my clothes, holes in my underwear, etc. Think orphan Annie.
Yeah. Do you still speak to your adoptive parents now?
I had a very, very close bond with my adoptive mum. She passed, I'm still, you know, I've got a decent bond with my my dad's my dad.
Yeah.
You know, I go up to Scotland and visit him every year.
Okay.
And we send each other birthday and Christmas cards and speak to each other. Yeah. You know.
How long was you with your adoptive parents for then?
They adopted me when I was 3.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, 42 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. At least you got a nice mum and dad out of it, didn't you? Fortunately, now. And unfortunately, because of the raven twenties.
I got a comfortable home.
Okay.
My mum and dad had their own issues.
Oh.
Basically, 4 or 5 months before they adopted me, my mum's mother died.
Yeah.
Now, at that point, the social service social worker should have said, how about we just leave the adoption, let you grieve your mum, give you time.
Yeah.
Instead, her mum died in February, they adopted me in the August.
Okay.
So,
was that a good distraction, or did that grief bleed
well,
into, you know,
all the love and that she had for her mum, she then poured into me, which was great,
yeah.
Except she expected me to have, you know, for us to have the same bond that she had with her mum.
Yeah.
And
obviously
then...
Difficult, obviously difficult for you because of the mistrust you've had in the...
Yeah.
In the abandonment issues. You struggled
with
the
mess. Yes, I was... a very, very rebellious child and teenager, and you know, I was determined. My mantra has always been, I've got me, I don't need anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and my dad then left when I was 9.
Oh.
You know, they divorced.
Yeah.
And, you know, the social worker saw the nice house, saw my dad's cushy job, and that's all he saw. He didn't probe into what the marriage was like.
No.
You know. I mean, don't get me wrong, my mum has... always been very supportive of me.
Yeah.
You know, she has been with me through the roughest parts of my life and has still been there.
Yeah.
My dad has, you know, he was sporadic in my life.
It tends to be that, don't be strange dads.
Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. You deal the hand you're given.
Yeah, certainly do. What I'm going to do, Nicole, is obviously I'm going to write to the social services in Edinburgh about your time in foster care. I'll also write to the Great Western and obviously your GP. When I get the information back from social services, shall we do a comparison of what you've got, what I get?
Yeah.
And I'll share what I've got for you, and, you know, if it's the same or there's more that you've got, we'll do some form of, you know, comparison, and then we'll go through all these statements, make sure that everything's in there that you want. And then I'd obviously, your mental health issues for your GP and the evidence of the suicide attempt from the Great Western, we'll then pin that to your claim and then submit that to the Scottish Redress. What we do is, what we've done so far, Nicole, is we've gave Scottish Redress notice that we are going to claim. We've got an application number for you. We're waiting on a caseworker. We've also been recognised as your law firm, as your lawyer. What we'll do is, what happens is we've told them, basically, don't start on our claim as we're going to send you evidence. So your claim's been registered. We get you this evidence, you know, from the social services and also your medical records. And then we pin that and we give it to them as an accurate whole of life picture, should we say, of the trauma you faced as a child. We then await a panel date. Nicole, it's a behind closed door thing, so we don't need to attend. A panel will judge our case, and then from there, hopefully, we'll be able to get you the recognition of any wrongdoing that you deserve, and hopefully, an offer of financial compensation.
Well, surely the fact that I was in, I think it was 4 foster homes from the age of 1 to 2.
Yeah. You were in 4 foster
homes?
One
I was only in for a week. Yeah, 4 foster homes.
Okay. Are they all in the
From the age
area?
Of one. Yeah.
Okay.
Because
so
I was born in Edinburgh.
Yeah, so I'll get that. I'll get everything from the social services, won't I? I'll request your whole social services.
Yeah.
So we'll get that. And then obviously we can go through them all together when I get it.
Yeah.
It won't, as you know, Nicole, it's not a quick process. It could take me.
No.
10 months. Could take me 6 weeks, but, you know, we'll be fighting tooth and nail to get your information for you. But yeah, do you have any questions for me, Nicole, on you know, the task I'm about to undertake or anything about
no.
the case? Okay. Perfect. I just need to go back one step with you, Nicole, in relation to our fees. Make sure that you're fully aware of our fees and how we charge and what we charge and what other options are out there for you. Obviously, these cases are deemed to be very sensitive, Nicole, so I just need to make sure you're fully on board before we go off and start working, you know, 8 to 10 months worth of work. I also need to run through it quite clearly on this recorded call, Nicole, as well, just for our compliance department.
Yeah.
So just to let you know, Nicole, you can actually apply to the Scottish Redress yourself. You don't need the help of a law firm to do so. That would obviously entail, you know, gathering your own evidence and creating and submitting your own case if you wish to do so. That's an option for you.
Uh-huh.
That's option one. Option two is there are other law firms out there, Nicole, that will help you apply to the Scottish Redress. It's quite important, this, and they won't charge you any fees. The reason they don't charge fees is that they get paid directly from the Scottish Government as part of what's called the Government Legal Fee Scheme, where those law firms get £2,000 per client, whether that client wins, loses or draws that case. Now, as a fellow law firm, I can't legally discuss those law firms' practices and what they would do, and probably more importantly, Nicole, what they won't do for you as a client.
If they get paid anyway, regardless whether they win, lose or draw, they ain't going to bother their arse because, you know, they're getting paid no matter what. Whereas... what I understand, you're on a no-win, no-fee claim.
Yeah. So what we
so
do
you want to win.
We need to win, yeah. What we do is we enter into a private fee agreement with yourself under a no-win, no-fee contract in which our fees are capped at 16% plus VAT. Now, that total works out around about 19.2%. So they're capped at 16% plus VAT. So no matter how much time and effort and work goes into your case, you'll never pay us more than 16% plus VAT. On the flip side, the no-fee side of the no-win, no-fee contract, because you've been through such, because you're a survivor of the care system and you've been through so much, you know, so much trauma throughout your life, we will never put you under any sort of financial pressure or any sort of financial duress if we are unable to gain compensation for you. So if you don't win, obviously you don't pay. So it is a genuine no win, no fee, Nicole.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. At least I know you obviously are wanting to get paid, so you're going to do your best to try and get money for me. A company that's going to get paid regardless isn't going to try.
Yeah. Like I said, you can say that I can't on this recorded call. But it's in our best interest to get you the most amount of money. Let's just say that. Our fates are tied, aren't they? So,
yeah.
So do you understand those two options, Nicole, I've just given you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Are you happy for me to continue with your case?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Just to let you know, Nicole, you have what's called a 14-day cooling-off period. A cooling off period is just obviously if you want to change your mind and walk away and rip up any agreement with us, you can do up until day 14, and then after that we then obviously start building your case for you. If you're unaware of the 14-day cooling off period from the date you signed, I can restart that from today on this phone call, or alternatively, if you're happy with us as a law firm, happy with our fees and just want us to crack on, you have the right to waive the 14-day cooling off period and we can get started on your case. But that's entirely up to
you. I waive the 14-day cooling off period. Just get started.
Perfect. You have my number now, Nicole. My name's Michael. If you need me for anything, save my number, please. Give me a call.
If you remember something or you just want to have a chat with somebody who understands your background, give me a ring. I'll be in touch with you every 3 to 4 weeks by email and by a phone call. And I'll write to you within the next 2 weeks with all my contact details and outline of my process. But I'm going to be the person that walks you through to the end now, Nicole. So if you need anything, give me a call.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Michael.
I know. Thank you. Thank you for being so brave and speaking to me. Thank you, Nicole.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye now.